everybody. Welcome to the Apologetics Canada podcast. Welcome to our conversation. We have Chris Battle and Andy Steiger here as usual.
The one and only.
The other one and the...
No, that doesn't work.
Hello.
That's here. Yeah, that just went down in flames just now.
It was a crash and burn moment. In fact, did you know that tomorrow is the anniversary? It'll be the 50th anniversary of Maverick's dad in the movie Top Gun flying over some line on some map as this, I'm quoting the movie, but, and he crashed November 5th, 1965.
Wow.
That's some pretty hardcore movie trivia going on right there.
You hear it here first.
Can we just be clear then on this? This is not a real event. This was a movie event.
That's correct. It's fictitious.
I have just when I think that I can't lose any more respect for Chris.
I can find a whole other bottom for you to realize. Yeah, I can sink ever lower.
Yeah. That is unbelievable. Just as long as we're clear that this was not a historical event, this was a movie event.
Yeah, we've moved on from Back to the Future to Top Gun, and what's next?
What is next? That is a good question.
You know what, though, Chris, we should probably mention to listeners that you and I like to mess with people's heads, actually, with movies.
It's quite
this
fun.
This is true.
I enjoy that, yeah.
Have we ever done this to you, Steve, or you've only seen.
Well, actually, Chris has, he keeps such a straight face and tells a straight up lie to me, and I just fall for it every time.
So tell people what we do, Chris.
Well, Andy typically will ask me about my uncle, how my uncle is doing.
So we'll be driving in the car with some people, just at a park, and I'll say, "Hey, Chris, what's up with your uncle, man? I can't believe what happened to him the other day."
Yeah, I know. Isn't that crazy, Andy? Okay, for those of you guys who don't know, my uncle, he's a sheriff down in the United States. And this past...
Exactly.
And then I'll launch into a story.
All of this is new to me. I'm very fascinated. Keep going.
Exactly. So then we would just play... We've done this with different movies. But basically, we begin to tell the plot...
Of a movie.
Yeah. But pretending as though it's our own life. Oh. And basically you just go until the person looks at you with that look of, I hate you.
Yeah.
You've been duking me for the last, 10 minutes.
So we'll use Jaws or...
That's our personal favorite.
That one's our favorite because, oh man,
Jaws,
it's good.
King Kong. The amazing part is that we've pretty much reached the end of a movie.
We've gotten to the point where it's like, and then my uncle puts a CO2 canister in the shark's mouth and shoots it and blows the shark up. And people are like, no way. No way.
And at that point, it's almost painful to let him know, hey, we've been making this whole thing up.
Yeah.
P.S. it's a movie.
Just another day at the at Apologetics Canada.
Oh, it's fun.
Oh, dear.
Good times.
Okay, now pulling ourselves up from the lowest of the lows now, let's talk about something a little bit more, shall we say...
Yeah, there's been some interesting...
Significant.
There's been some interesting stuff in the news lately.
That's not fake.
Yeah, that's
not
real.
Fake. Yeah, you pulled out an interesting article...
Yeah,
the other day. What's going on there?
It's in The Economist again, and it's called "Sagas by the Strip." And the little top part of it says "gang shootings," and it's really interesting what they've started doing. A strategy that started happening because they were realizing that there's particular times when gang shootings. Because it's, I should back up a little bit. It's gotten very much almost like computer programming or whatnot for them. They've taken the humanity out of it and they've started just crunching numbers.
Policing.
Yeah.
More specifically. Yeah.
Where is this happening?
This issue is talking about Las Vegas.
Las Vegas. Okay. Yeah. So,
but this article is about Las Vegas. This is policing across the United States.
Right.
And in fact, in Canada, where policing has become very mechanical.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah. Like Chris was saying, you're crunching the numbers. You're coming at fighting crime from a very methodical, very scientific method.
Criminology kind of a thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And trying to guess that way. So, but they've been finding that though they've had a lot of success recently, the murder rate has started to spike again, particularly in some of these high high crime areas and with a lot of gang violence and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So they were sort of at a loss, and they realized that there were certain points that were more susceptible to these things happening than others. And one of them is right after there would be some sort of a gang shooting. And this is particular time when the other gang would retaliate.
Right.
So they were at a loss as to what to do at that point because it's so emotional and high tension. So what they've been doing is essentially sending in the priests, right? They're talking about a couple pastors here particularly, but these
former gang members.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
former gang members gone
pastor.
Pastor.
Yeah, gone pastor. Yeah, they've gone rogue. And and they come alongside these families. So it gets quite graphic in talking about how they come into these situations where a person has just been shot and they're with the person and they're with the family. And
maybe they're at the funeral.
At the funeral. Mm. And these gang members are angry and they're wanting to retaliate. And these guys are saying, hey, let's pump the brakes a bit. Let's actually think this through. Would this person who's laying here has been shot, been a victim, would they want you to, and so on and so forth, trying to reason with these people in a loving way.
So what they're doing and what the article is talking about is here you've got a scientific approach that's been very effective from 1993 to 2014. Murder rates fell by half, which has been great, but they're realizing that they're missing the human component. That there's a human aspect to this, and that they're introducing and using pastors to do it, where they're going into the midst when people are at their most vulnerable, right? When hatred is at its highest, when people are wanting to retaliate, and doing something quite novel that's not very novel, and basically just saying, hey, what if you just forgive them? You know, what if you don't retaliate? You know, what if we stop this chain of violence? And they're finding that it's successful.
Yeah. So instead of arresting them or doing some sort of a precursor that way, they're basically just asking them to not do it. And it's working, like weirdly enough. Right. So there's this evil, if you will, or potential evil that's occurring and some evil acts that have already occurred. And then they're twisting it towards the good.
Now, I saw a movie recently that I think highlights this idea really well. In fact, it's a fabulous movie. Chris and I actually saw this, not alone. We were with our wives. The movie's called Cinderella.
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 So we're with our wives. We're having a movie night, and we watched the movie Cinderella. And there was a very interesting point in this movie, Cinderella, that I thought was quite fascinating.
Spoiler alert, spoiler alert.
Well, it's not really a spoiler. And that is that she, you know, the whole point of the movie is her mom tells her to be, I'm looking at you, Chris.
Oh, okay. Her mom tells her to be courageous and
kind.
Kind. Thank you.
So be courageous and kind. And so the whole movie is about her being courageous and kind. Mm-hmm. And there comes this point in which, you know, here the prince, she's fallen in love with the prince. The prince has fallen in love with her. And she's, you know, everything's starting to resolve itself, except for there's this evil stepmother that she needs to deal with. And and as she's leaving that house, she looks back at her evil stepmother and says to her, I forgive you.
Quite poignant.
Yeah.
Quite powerful.
It was quite powerful. And I thought, wow, you know, for a Disney movie, this movie is fantastic. It's got a lot of Christian themes throughout it, in fact. So what was interesting then is I was talking to a friend of mine who watched this movie in a movie theater. And she was telling me about how in the theater at that moment where she looks back and tells the stepmother, I forgive you, a child yelled out, I don't. And then and then multiple parents in the audience began to applaud this child, right? And what I thought was fascinating, and by my friend, by the way, was completely appalled, right? Like, because this is the human condition, right? You know, you don't need to forgive that person. You know, how dare you? But here to me was the real irony of the situation. And I think is really poignant to this this article, and that was that here this kid didn't realize that what made Cinderella beautiful and what in fact the movie was about was that there's a duality to Cinderella. that she was beautiful on the outside, but the reason that she was so beautiful on the outside is because she was willing to embrace these two characteristics that her mother had given her. Mm-hmm. And that was to be brave and to be kind. Mm-hmm. Now, what's interesting about these two things is that they're not physical things. You know, you're not going to go anywhere in the world and find bravery.
Mm-hmm. Or what's the color of kindness?
Yeah. Right? And so what you see is that there is that we inherently understand that there is that there's outer physical beauty, but that there is inner beauty as well. Mm-hmm.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because I don't know if you remember as we were watching the movie. Is it Kate Blanchett was the stepmother?
Yeah, I believe so.
Attractive woman, right?
And she would make a fantastic evil stepmother.
She'd also make a really good elf. Wait a minute.
But
Lord of the Rings.
As we were watching it, and she was the evil stepmother, and she had her two, attractive daughters. They were so cruel, and I remember looking over at Andy and saying, "It's pretty incredible at how." Someone's behavior can taint their beauty, right? Mm-hmm. So even the most attractive person on the outside can become disfigured or mm-hmm. unattractive because of how they behave.
Yes. And so then this raises some interesting perspectives, right? We begin to realize that there's a duality with when we're dealing with people. And I think what you're seeing in this article is the police force is really realizing this. You know, we can analyze the way people behave, but then they're by what they do, but really then we can start to look at why they do what they do, you know, the inner self, and begin to ask, okay, how can we affect that? Because that's going to affect the way that this person behaves.
Mm-hmm. It has interesting implications for determinism. I think
on a naturalistic
point of view, because it's
the fact that we can ask a person to change their behavior.
Exactly. And expect something to happen. And in fact, see change. In that sense, it seems to disprove determinism.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that we can choose to forgive. And by choosing to forgive, it actually affects who we are, not on the inside, but on the outside. Right. And so I think that these have some interesting implications to the way that our culture, our world is understanding how to understand what a person is. Mm. And how do we police people? How do we enforce laws? But then also how we look at ourselves. Because I find it, this is the problem with evil, and we're going to get into this topic today, is nobody sees themselves as evil, right? They all see themselves as the victim. I think that's why you would have a kid in a movie theater in Cinderella, where she says, I forgive you, and he's like, I don't, right? Because we all want to be forgiven, but we don't think that we need to be forgiven. Mm-hmm.
Isn't that fascinating? I saw, so just a couple weeks ago, I saw a video clip of this police officer sitting by his cruiser or whatever, talking to a bunch of people, probably teenagers, it looked like, right? And he was talking to them and saying, hey, look, I'm on the same team with you guys. Just want to make sure that, we don't have any trouble. I don't want to arrest you guys. So, here are some rules that I would like to suggest. We're all adults here. Let's do this. And they were like, these guys were all very obedient, right? And they listened. They respected this police officer. And there was this kind of human interaction there.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, Steve, because in a number of psychology journals right now, they've been talking about how this is a major problem, and in fact is one of the problems in policing right now, is that in policing right now, as you've been seeing in the news, like it is just nonstop with the YouTube videos of either the police officer being dehumanized or the criminal being dehumanized, and that it's going both ways. Right. I mean, in fact, think about what is the most common term for a police officer these days.
Well, pig.
Pig.
Right.
That's been going for a while.
To refer to them as an animal, right? Mm-hmm. Or we refer to them like as the men in blue or, right? Mm-hmm. Like, or whatever. We begin to view them very mechanically. And it's interesting in this article that it talks about how police very mechanically. And it's not surprising then that people view them very mechanically. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, they begin to dehumanize these police officers. And so what's interesting, so, you know, obviously the police officer does the same thing, right? They're mm-hmm. in the thick of crime and nonstop, right? And it's very easy to dehumanize, you know, these parasites, if you will, that that are preying on people, blah, 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 you know, and the way that they view them. There was an interesting thing that was done actually here in British Columbia back during the Olympics that had an interesting effect. A friend of the show actually was talking to me about this the other day, about how he's a former police officer. He's now retired. But one of the things that they did during the Olympics is they brought the cameras onto the other side, and they began to view things from the police officer's perspective instead of the criminal's perspective. Mm-hmm. As you know, most things are filmed from the criminal's perspective or from
the third party, somebody outside of the police officer.
Yeah, not that everyone's a criminal, but you know what I'm saying. Instead of the law enforcer's perspective. Mm-hmm. And what happened was that this had a very humanizing effect on the situation, and there was a much lower violence that was taking place. And so I think it's very interesting that what's taking place in our culture right now and these humanizing effects that we're seeing. And I think maybe this is a good launching point into the topic that we want to look into today on evil.
Mm-hmm. Right. So as we're going into this now, we're on the asking the question part of, you know, the problem of evil and suffering. I just want to start off then just by talking about, you know, how do different worldviews make sense of evil, right? For example, say Buddhists, right? I mean, obviously there is suffering, evil and suffering in the world. And in fact, Buddhism arose in response to suffering.
Yeah. Stephen, I've been talking a lot about this lately.
Yeah. So
how would I say that the Buddhist understands evil? Well, let's dialogue on this, Steve, because there's some debate on how this is understood. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, the Buddhist is going to say equate evil or suffering, mm-hmm. you know, and really they're not going to use the word evil as much as they're going to use the word suffering.
That's right.
And they're ultimately going to just say that you suffer because you desire.
Mm-hmm.
Now, desire,
from the readings that I've been doing, now the word desire there is literally thirst. And there's this idea of grasping things, hanging on to things. And of course, in the Buddhist worldview, this creates suffering because everything is impermanent, right? Nothing lasts. Everything is changing. And so hanging on to something that's not going to last will bring you suffering because eventually you're going to lose it.
Right. So then the goal of Buddhism, as we've discussed in the past, is nirvana, meaning to snuff or to blow out like a candle, to cease. And ultimately what they want to cease is desire. Mm-hmm. That's what they're wanting to be snuffed or to blown out. Now here's where the contention is for some. And I would say then, and others would agree, and Buddhists, in fact, some Buddhists would agree that when you cease to desire, you cease to exist, that you're extinguishing yourself.
Yeah, ultimately, that's the natural consequence once you die, that you've kind of broken the chain reaction of samsara, right, the reincarnation. So when that's cut off, you don't have to come back anymore, and so you basically cease to exist in that way. Now, in all of this, I noticed that the whole issue of evil and suffering, I mean, there is really no evil as such, if you think about it, because
in some traditions, it's actually all just an illusion anyways.
Yeah, in Maya, right? It's just all an illusion. In fact, Ravi Zacharias sometimes talks about talking to a Buddhist monk, and when he told the monk about, you know, Adolf Hitler and things like that, the response he got was, well, that was a silly thing to do.
Right.
That was a silly thing that Hitler did.
Silly.
Yeah, it's funny because I had an interesting conversation with a Buddhist monk too once where he was talking about how we shouldn't kill and all these things. Mm-hmm. And then I asked him then about abortion. It was really interesting to watch him try to become politically correct in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's easy to play lip service to something, but then how does your worldview deal with such things is a whole nother issue.
And from there, you can even push it farther. Like if if the guy wants to go politically correct and say, well, that should be allowed, then you can always throw in the gender selective abortion, right? Are you opposed to that? If not, why not, right?
Let's throw Islam on the table here.
Yeah.
How does Islam deal with evil?
They will say it's that, from what I understand, because humanity is frail, we make mistakes.
I was going to say, the thing that I hear often from them is forgetfulness.
Yeah.
It's just a mistake. It's forgetfulness. It's not really, you know, it's not that you were born evil. They don't hold to original sin.
No.
They would hold more to this idea that we make mistakes.
Right. In their creation account, it's a little bit different from what you see in the Bible, in that Adam actually, you know, he does something wrong, but then immediately when he's confronted by Allah, he asks for forgiveness and he is forgiven and it's done. And so there's, you kind of see a glimpse of that, right? Whereas Christians, especially, you know, the Western tradition would go, okay, that's the problem. Like, that's where original sin came into play and we're all guilty of that sin. But as far as Islam is concerned, it's just a mistake you made. You forget.
And so what you try to do then is try to make as few mistakes as possible.
Right.
And then you try to do lots of good things to make up for any mistakes that you have made, so that on that day when you are judged by Allah and your good and bad deeds are weighed, you're hoping that there's more good than bad deeds. And if Allah so deems, you get welcomed into paradise.
You know, it's funny. It seems like ignorance seems to be a running theme in many of the world's religions.
Absolutely.
With respect to how evil comes about, or the human condition comes about, because Buddhists would say the same thing. It's a matter of ignorance. It sounds like Islam is something
Hinduism, Confucianism, Scientology. Talked about the other day. Ignorance is a huge part of all those.
Mm-hmm. Well, have you noticed though that even in the contemporary narrative, people are trying to, even in the church, try to make it about ignorance in a sense that we're not necessarily culpable if we don't know, or how are we supposed to be responsible?
Right.
Under these sort of circumstances kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is the part about Christianity that I think is so valuable and important, and that is that Christianity takes evil seriously and makes a couple statements about it. One is that evil does exist, and that things, there are truly heinous acts that are wrong and should be judged. Mm-hmm. Now, this is an interesting idea that doesn't get picked up on in a lot of world religions, and that is, where's the justice in all this?
Right.
Where's the justice in the mistakes that you've made and the rectifying of those mistakes?
Right. Because if you look at Buddhism, it's just a matter of karma, right? Cause and effect. If you do something wrong, then you're going to suffer for it. So you don't want to suffer, so you don't do it. So it's not that it's necessarily evil what you're doing. It's just something that happens to bring about a result that's not desirable.
It's like a hindrance.
Yeah, and so it's very much a pragmatic kind of a move.
Yeah, hindering you from nirvana, and now now that you've killed somebody, right, you're going to have to go through a lot more samsara.
Yeah, and then in the case of atheism, or more specifically like physicalism, right, it's just, where's justice in that? It's just how, you know, like Richard Dawkins said, you know, there is no rhyme or reason. Some people will have a happy life, others will suffer, and this is exactly what we would expect of a world that's just randomly organized.
And this is the worldview of scientism, you know, and that is the idea that, you know, all that exists is the physical world, and there's nothing beyond that. And if that's the case, then in fact there is no, well, scientism is a little bit more than just equating it to physicalism.
They go hand in hand.
Yeah, they go hand in hand without going into defining scientism. Mm-hmm. But that ultimately what you've got here is, and this is my biggest concern, by the way, and this is why I think that this needs to be discussed, and that is that there's a lot of religions and worldviews, such as scientism, that ultimately buys into this idea that evil doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's going to end up impacting how a person views the world, and particularly mm-hmm. a person's responsibility towards trying to fight evil. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not going to try to fight against something or try to exact justice in a world that I think is devoid of evil. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to go on my merry way and just do whatever it is that makes me feel good.
Mm-hmm. And this is one of the real beauties of Christianity.
Right.
And this is where I really challenge people when they, mm-hmm. they want to try to soften evil. I'm like, no. You got to understand that Christianity has a high view of evil, but it's because we have a high view of evil that we have a high view of good, and that Christianity is such a dominant force throughout our world for good.
Yeah. Another aspect of Christianity that makes, that gives such a thing as good and evil their rightful place, so to speak, in our lives, I find is the whole human aspect of things, right? Because we use the word like good and evil, and they don't really mean much to us. And I certainly think it's the case with the word evil, right? But then when we had Rixa Him come and share his story, and just
he's a survivor from Cambodia,
right?
He
survived the killing fields. But even there, like when I heard that he was a survivor of the Cambodian killing fields, it didn't mean much to me. But then I heard his story. And his description of it, right?
It's intense.
Yeah.
Well, this is one of the humanizing effects of Christianity is mm-hmm. that we participate in and value
right.
people's stories, their mm-hmm. testimonies, that we allow people to demonstrate their humanity to us, not just those that survived mm-hmm. the killing fields,
right.
but perhaps even those that participated mm-hmm. in the killing fields. Or here we've got an article of a pastor that was a former gang member, mm-hmm. right? And his testimony is an influential part of who he is to the police that now value him, and also to the criminals that he ministers to, mm-hmm. and that he brings humanity, or in our testimonies and our stories, we bring humanity to the person, mm-hmm. right? No matter whether or not yeah. they were drug dealers, drug addicts, homeless, criminals, whatever they may have yeah. previously done.
Yeah, that's what I think is really interesting, because that human aspect really brings good and evil alive. It's like once you face the human in it, it's really hard to deny it now.
That's right.
Because people can say, oh, evil doesn't exist. And then that one story that Rixa told me just happened. When he was in the grave, mm-hmm. his little baby brother was still in the hands of the killers, right? And what he, just the way he described it, I heard them, like he heard them striking my brother with the butt end of a rifle once, and then this shriek, right, from the baby brother. Again, the shriek gets even louder, and then the third time, thud. And then there was silence. He said, just the way he described it like that, mm-hmm. when there's the human. And I'm like, wow, like I can't deny that this was an evil act, right? So you put the person in it. The same thing with goodness, right? When you see the person in it, it's different. I mean, how many times have we seen, we do that with animals too. How many times have we seen, like, say in Pocahontas, right? You know, there's the European colonist or whatever, and he is about to shoot a bear. Pocahontas stops him, and they follow the bear, and the bear goes to the den with the cubs, right? Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, wow, you know, can't shoot this bear. I mean,
that's a classic storyteller's, you know, a tool. If mm-hmm. if you are going to get an audience to identify with a character and to value that character, you have to give that character personhood. Mm-hmm. You need to help that person identify
yeah.
with the character, and whether that be an inanimate object. Inanimate object or an animal or whatever it might be, mm-hmm. you anthropomorphize it. You give it human right. characteristics.
I think it's interesting too, even how it's happening now in the fight against pornography, in mm-hmm. the Fight a New Drug. It's a website that exists to fight pornography. One of the things they've been doing, one of the tools they've been using, is interviewing people who've been impacted, like former porn stars and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's very powerful when you have a person that was essentially objectified for other people's pleasures for mm-hmm. a number of years, telling their story. It humanizes them, and they cease mm-hmm. to be an object and become human, mm-hmm. become, right? Little quotes. Mm-hmm. It's fascinating to me to see how big of an impact that is having on the war against pornography.
Yeah, and I think, again, this is where Christianity is sort of, I think, a cut above other worldviews, in the sense that I think it's in Christianity that personhood makes best sense, right? Yeah. Like you're certainly not going to find that in physicalism, because ultimately it reduces all down to physics and chemistry. In Buddhism, it's just the five aggregates or whatever that are constantly changing, which is very actually similar to physicalism or atheism. And I think that's why a lot of atheists like Buddhism in that sense, like Sam Harris, for example. And then there are a bunch of other worldviews that I could mention, but I think Christianity makes best sense of personhood. And I think that's where...
Well, in best sense of how we experience life, right?
Like
we all, I think, grasp that we're people, right? Exactly. That we're experiencing life as people in community. And Christianity actually validates that, validates our experience, validates that truth. Mm-hmm. Whereas the other, many of the other worldviews most try to invalidate or try to somehow push us away from that direction.
Mm-hmm. And it's on that note, I think, that we can wrap up here. And I wanted to end each of these two podcasts that we're going to do on evil on a positive note, specifically being the impact that Christianity has in fact made in our culture. I want to just use a couple different quotes as we wrap this up. I'll just use one for today. In fact, an atheist. This was an article that was found in December of 2008 in Time magazine, actually their online version. He says, the title of it was, "As an Atheist, I Truly Believe Africa Needs God." The journalist that was writing this is Matthew Paris, and he said, quote, "Now a confirmed atheist, I've become convinced of the enormous contribution that Christian evangelicalism makes in Africa, sharply distinct from the work of secular NGOs, government projects, and international aid efforts. These alone will not do. Education and training alone will not do. In Africa, Christianity changes people's hearts. It brings a spiritual transformation. The rebirth is real. The change is good. I used to avoid this truth by applauding, as you can, the practical work of mission churches in Africa. It's a pity, I would say, that salvation is part of the package. But Christians, black and white, working in Africa do heal the sick, do teach people to read and write, and only the severest kind of secularists could see a mission hospital or school and say the world would be better without it."
Amen.
Amen to that. Well, that's a very good note to end on. Thank you, listeners, for joining us. We'll come back next week and hash out this thing a little more and actually attempt to answer the question of evil and suffering. But thank you for joining us today. The Apologetics Canada podcast has been a ministry of Apologetics Canada. See you next week.